Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 10 of the Canvas Shop. Really exciting, double digits. I might just sleep an extra hour less tonight to celebrate, and I'm excited about it. It's not an interview, but a little bit of a book review, I guess. I keep pretty extensive notes on books that I read, so This is one that I enjoyed reading, and it had some good content in it. So I'm going to go over some of the notes that I took and talk about some of the ideas that I had going over those notes. But before I begin, I need to mention that if you like this show that I'm doing, the content that I'm putting out, consider donating to my Patreon. As little as $1 a month, it will really help me stay on the ball with all of this, and I would really appreciate that. It would mean the world to me. In addition to that, all these videos go up on YouTube, and, well, all of these podcasts get turned into video form and then uploaded to YouTube. And some of the ones that I'm going to be doing in the future are going to have some video quality things to follow along, so you can see visually maybe the quotes that I'm doing or the research that I've done. And then all the interviews that I've done in Chicago, at least, have been videotaped, so you can actually see both of us sitting on the chairs and talking to each other if you're into that sort of thing. And follow me on Instagram, check out my Twitter, I post there occasionally, and generally get plugged in. I would really appreciate that. In addition to that, I'm also doing a portrait series of paintings for people that I'm fans of on social media. It's going to be a run of 10, and I'd really appreciate that if you guys checked it out too, gave me one of those little hearts, and maybe posted a comment. That'd be fantastic. So without further ado, let's get into this show that I've prepared. So the book that we're talking about today is Post-Production: Culture as Screenplay, How Art Reprograms the World. It's by Nicolas Bouriad. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. I hope so. Let's see. I think I'm reading out of the second edition of it. So if you're interested in looking up these quotes and where they're at, then you can find the second edition, be able to find them pretty easily. But ultimately, Nicolas Bouriad was born in 1968. He is a curator and art critic who has curated numerous exhibitions and biennials all over the world. He co-founded and from 1999 to 2006, he was co-director of the Palais de Tokyo, Paris. He was also founder and director of the contemporary art magazine Documents sur l'Art and correspondent in Paris for Flash Art from 87 to 95. Bouriad was the Gulbenkian Curator of Contemporary Art from 2007 to 2010 at Tate Britain, London, and in 2009 he curated the fourth Tate Triennial entitled Altermodern. He was the director of the École Nationale Supérieure de Bordeaux Arts, an art school in Paris, France, from 2011 to 2015. In 2015, he was appointed director of the Future Contemporary Art Center of Montpellier, France, due to open in 2019, and director of Le Pinceret Art Center. You can tell I'm quoting that from a website, and I probably butchered the French in there. But what is he talking about in here, in this book called Post-Production? I can tell you that he's not talking about video editing techniques. This is a follow-up essay to a previously published work by Bourriaud called Relational Aesthetics, published in 98, which is defined as a set of artistic practices. Relational aesthetics is defined as this: a set of artistic practices which take as their theoretical and practical point of departure the whole of human relations and their social context, rather than an independent and private space. Post-Production was published in 2001 and discusses how, since the early 90s, an ever-increasing number of artworks have been created on the basis of pre-existing works. More and more artists interpret, reproduce, re-exhibit, or use works made by others or available cultural products. So that gives you a little bit of a baseline as to what we're talking about. And I'll jump right into it. So, in the preface to the second edition, paragraph 5 is my first quote. He says, "The critics who counter my analysis with the argument that this is nothing new are often the last to know that Gerard Murphy or Stuart Davis made pop art in the 30s, which takes nothing away from James Rosenquist or Andy Warhol. The difference resides in the articulation. The working principles of today's artists seem to me to break with the manipulation of references and citation. The works of Pierre Huyghet, I don't even know, Douglas Gordon, this one's even worse, Vyrkrit Tiravana, deeply re-examine notions of creation, authorship, and originality through a problematics of the use of cultural artifacts, which, by the way, is absolutely new." What does he mean by articulation? The differences resides in the articulation. I think he's referring to the pop art of the 30s versus 60s, I guess, for Andy Warhol. I don't know when James Rosenquist was active, but difference resides in the articulation. I'm sure what he's probably hinting to as well is the cultural artifacts, like he said in the end of that they're referencing, the different sorts of articulations there, which pop art, I'm not sure if you know, I'm not even sure if I know, but pop art being pretty centered around things that are popular at that point in time, reworking icons, symbols, which is going to be something that we get into more here, but I just thought that was a little interesting thing that he added in there. The difference resides in the articulation. Let's go to the second quote. Why don't we? "When screenplays become form, a user's guide to the world, Pierre Joseph, Little Democracy." Little Democracy is a work by Pierre Joseph, and this is paragraph 3 from that section. He says, and I quote, "Why do so many artists strive to remake, recopy, dismantle, and reconstruct the components of our visual universe? What makes Pierre Huyghet reshoot Hitchcock and Pasolini? What, for leisure? To produce an alternate space and time, that is, to reintroduce the multiple and the possible into the closed circuit of the social, and for the thing, the artist must go back as far as possible to the collective machinery." Man, here is when the French really comes out in him, and there's just so much loaded in there, and hard to decipher, because it's been a little while since I read this book. I don't really know the context of it. But the quote out of there: "To produce an alternate space and time, to reintroduce the multiple and the possible into the closed circuit of the social. I was wondering what he meant by closed circuit of the social, so I just Googled closed circuit, and the only thing that came out was closed circuit TV. Not the only thing, it was the top thing, but it worked really well. And the definition of a closed circuit television system, also known as video surveillance, is the use of video cameras to transmit a signal to a specific place on a limited set of monitors. Now, what I took from that is transmitting a signal to a specific place on a limited set of monitors. To me, that kind of conjured up this idea of like a specific idea that's being transmitted to a specific audience, and plug that into what he's saying about the closed circuit of the social. Seems like the social has this closed circuit aspect of only revealing one particular aspect of one particular thing in a very finite amount of viewers or finite amount of perspectives, probably. I'd go with the latter, the finite amount of perspectives. The alternate space and time that's being created is maybe a different view from the CCTV monitors. Another dimension to the societal form that's already been created, that's existing as these cultural artifacts. And I find it funny that he references film and refilming of film before he mentioned the closed circuit. That's what really that drove me to just concluding right off the bat that he was referencing closed circuit television when it came to closed circuit society, because he was just talking about film, and obviously closed circuit television utilizes a bunch of cameras. So if Hitchcock created One Worldview with Psycho, or Rear Window, Hoje is taking another view from that same world and changing it to something that he sees, or he's taking that worldview to another place that he sees through it. And it's the parallel that I drew to that, it's much like DJs taking an old song that may or may not be down tempo even, and remixing it into a dance context. Both examples are taking this cultural artifact and putting a new spin on it, and not exactly to fix what's been done before, but to add a different dimension to it, sometimes with a negative spin, usually with a positive spin or some sort of homage to that, the previous artifact. And I really don't know what he's talking about with the collective machinery thing. Maybe someone can chime in on that. And now that I'm thinking of it, the collective subconscious, maybe, as collective machinery. There's the collective tying them together. That would be another allusion to symbology. What he was talking about with cultural artifacts. Cultural artifacts usually come in the form of symbols, which I think we'll get into that more. But I don't really see the point of going so far back into collective memory, like he mentioned, since some of the things that are recent, right, recent symbols, in other words, can have just as much of an emotional connection to the things that have been around for a long time. So he'll have to explain himself with that. I'll meet him out on the street. All right, next, we have an excerpt from Playing the World, Reprogramming Social Forms. Paragraph 4. Talking about post-productive artists in general, but specifically the ones mentioned in the previous chapter, they testify to a similar will to reveal the invisible structures of the ideological apparatus. They deconstruct systems of representation and revolve around a definition of art as visual information that destroys entertainment. Man, that visual information that destroys entertainment is pretty powerful. But I really relate to the will to reveal the invisible structures of the ideological apparati. That's pretty cool. I think about that from time to time and try to include that into my artwork, that there's so many things that aren't what they seem. Like, pop artists have a huge persona that's built up, but usually behind that is some pretty grimy, some pretty dirty life, existential facts that everyone has to deal with that seems to be just glossed over by the image that they have. And why would you want to destroy entertainment to begin with? I like being entertained. What the fuck, dude? But I guess deconstructing systems of representation can reveal the contradictions or unhealthy / unproductive tendencies of society. So he's got that much going for him. And we'll talk about pop stars more. That's something I enjoy. Pop music sometimes. It's interesting, you know? But a quick little caveat on that. Man, you can tell very clearly, or at least I can, from the experiences I've had. I can tell when someone's trying to be a pop artist and they're not actually into the music. Like Toro y Moi, and I love Toro y Moi, but man, the newest album that he put out, there's a couple good songs, but it's like he's trying to be a pop artist, and he's not. He's a chill wave artist, and it just doesn't work, because there's some authenticity that's lost. Whereas with artists like Camila Cabello, I think, she's got a couple songs that I like out right now. Some good bass lines in them. And she probably enjoys pop music. And she makes good pop music because of it. People all over the place making me sigh. So let's look at this next quote. Nah, let's skip that quote. I don't know enough about Marxism to uphold my opinions. They're not even really opinions, observations that I had on that one. He's not even talking about Marx. It just sounded like he was talking about some Marxist ideas. But anyways, we'll skip it. Next section, playing the world, reprogramming social forms. Felipe Pereno and ... must have had a long title to it. So, paragraph 2. Quote, real critique is a critique of existing reality by existing reality itself. I love that. Interpreting the world does not suffice. It must be transformed. It is the process that Pereno attempts, starting with the realm of images, which he believes play the same role in reality as symptoms do in an individual's unconscious. This one gets me all kinds of excited. First of all, who's Felipe Pereno? He's a conceptual artist that works with film, audio video installations, performance art, drawing, and text-based art. A lot of his works, a lot of his installations are very location-oriented. He doesn't travel with a show, which I thought was pretty interesting. I don't really know exactly why, but I guess if you're doing an installation that's critiquing Christmas, it probably wouldn't work in Asia. I'm just throwing some ideas around here. The quote, images which he believes play the same role in reality as symptoms do in an individual's unconscious, hints at one of my favorite lenses to view art history through, the psychoanalytic perspective on art history. symptoms in an individual's unconscious. What does that mean? Such as a neurosis? Probably. Brings up visions of Jung and Freud. And from what I understand, symptoms in an individual's unconscious play the role of showing an imbalance. So Pareno possibly thinks that images within society can display an imbalance in the culture as well. Which is pretty interesting. I know Jung thought, late Jung, Carl Jung, thought that neuroses were caused by the subconscious trying to compensate for a lack of balance in your conscious world, or the life that you live. Barely any of it's conscious. We all know that. But, man, that first part, real critique is a critique of existing reality by existing reality itself. I'm going to skip ahead because that relates exactly to this Poppy character that's been showing up on YouTube lately. Poppy is all sorts of things, but one thing that she definitely is, or the character is this critique on fame and the music industry. Because if you watch her videos, they start out with her pretty much announcing that the only thing she wants is to become a famous pop star. What's so wrong with that? And she just wants to make content that people like. But as the story of Poppy goes on, she goes through some cult-like rituals in some videos with these music industry people. And it gets sort of dark. It gets fairly dark. To the untrained horror fan, it gets pretty dark. And it really goes to exemplify what Baudrillard, French words, is talking about in that quote, by real critique is a critique of existing reality by reality itself. And, you know, I wouldn't say that cult-like rituals are quite reality within the music sphere, although that's completely wrong in a lot of places. It really exemplifies what reality is. And just that there's another side of the coin, you know, to all these beautiful faces. Another song I like, I think it's... oh, what's that guy's name? We Are Not Beautiful People. I like that. Alright, so how to inhabit global culture, eclecticism, and post-production. Paragraph 8. In the face of the economic abstraction that makes daily life unreal, or an absolute weapon of techno-market power, artists reactivate forms by inhabiting them, pirating private property and copyrights, brands and products, museum-bound forms and signatures. If the downloading of forms, these samplings and remakes, represent important concerns today, it is because these forms urge us to consider global culture as a toolbox, an open narrative space, rather than an unequivocal narrative and a product line. Recent example of that would be Virgil Abloh's show. At least I went to the one in Chicago at the MCA, and he had a few examples of this. One that I remember right off the bat is a black and white painting with the Cotton logo. I'm sure you've seen it. It just says Cotton with like a tree on there and a little bit of a border around it. I can't remember exactly the purpose of that painting that he did. It probably had something to do with clothes. and the importance of clothing, because he's a big clothing designer, and that's definitely something that he does. But it goes to show that it goes to exemplify what Mr. Bourgeard is talking about as global culture as a toolbox. He took that logo, which already has societal influence and emotional attachment to it for people that have seen it before, whether or not you consciously believe that you have an emotional attachment to a cotton logo, it's going to evoke some sort of memory when you look at it. And he's playing on that. He's remixing it into a form that's juxtaposing it between something and exemplifying something. It was black and white. I could read into that, but I'm not going to. Brands, products, copyrighted material, forms, signatures, all the things that he said. There are also terms that could be boiled down into symbols or symbology, the study of these symbols. These things that Bourgeard are mentioning all have lives of their own. Think of Nike, Versace, Chanel, brands like that, or artistic personas such as Katy Perry or the Beatles, especially pop artists. They have highly built personas that are communicated and developed through their art form. And these things wind up being remixed by people like Poppy. And they're ripe for the taking, to bring it back to more plant-based discussion, vegan discussion. These works of art are pretty interesting to look at, because symbols are ingrained in our subconscious and we recognize them. Whether we want to or not, they're connected with memories and emotional content, like I was saying. And you can juxtapose them next to other things, such as cult-like behaviors in Poppy's example. And it really critiques reality, or critiques the reality that you thought you were in or that you are in. I don't know, we're not going to talk about that. And can widen the perspective of a particular thing. Some people also think that Poppy is some sort of ARG, which I'm going to be talking about in the next episode, or maybe even the episode after the next, because it's a pretty big rabbit hole to go down. There's a lot of information, and a lot of it's garbage. But I don't know why, I was just reminded of that. Oh, I have some more examples in addition to Poppy. There's been memes that I've seen where people have worked the Nike Just Do It branding into some very dark imagery, let's say. I don't want to get into the details of what I'm referencing, I'm purposefully not. But it definitely adds this critique and juxtaposition that was not there before, and adds another dimension to this cultural artifact of Just Do It, which, you know, originally through the CCTV of the societal machinery, we view as working out. It's like 6 a.m., you're supposed to work out this morning, just do it, strap on those fucking Nikes, just get out the door, just do it. And it's a lot different when you're looking at a picture of someone holding a razor blade with Just Do It over there, over that image. It's a lot different. I just got into the details, so fuck it. This is gonna be explicit, I'm using language, you know, we're laid back here. But yeah, critique of existing reality by existing reality itself. Really, one development that's definitely changed since the writing of that is, what the hell even is reality? That's a good question, isn't it? I don't know the answer to that. Reality is just like this hallucination that your brain, which is basically a sack of fat with some electricity running through it, comes up with to make sense of things and help you survive. Right? That's an aspect of it. But of course, it goes a lot deeper than that. But existing reality itself, I'm reminded again of these ARG things where they really bend reality with the effects of fast communication and being able to share videos on the internet, where you're looking at something fictional and wondering, is it real? And if Poppy's an ARG, then it plugs into this great. That is, if you consider existing reality something that you're not sure yet is not reality, if that makes any sense. It might be it's existing reality in someone's head. So the, using something like that to critique reality, I think is pretty, that's a pretty genius little art project they've got going on there. But ultimately, that's the end of my quotes. At any rate, thank you guys for listening to me rant on some random quotes that I pulled out of a book. I really appreciate it. And please subscribe to the podcast, like some stuff, show some love, send me a message. I would really appreciate that. Check out the new work that's coming out and all that good stuff. I also upload some videos to my Instagram television channel now at this point. So if you're looking for any extra rants, discussion topics, short little quips that aren't long enough to be podcasts, feel free, by all means, check out that part of the internet. And you'll get a little extra dose of stuff between these longer format podcasts that I'm doing. And welcome to the new decade. I don't know if I mentioned that before. If I did, who cares? 2020 is going to be great, right? That's what I keep telling myself. It's what everyone keeps saying. So I'm just going to believe that. I'm going to create that reality for myself. It's now existing reality for me. So 2020 is going to be great, you know? And that's all I got. Have a good day, everybody. Talk to you soon.